TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
Hi, this is Armand DeMille inviting you to tune in Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m. to The Positive Mind, a program dedicated to bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. We do this through promoting your understanding of yourself and the people around you. Again, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 p.m., The Positive Mind, right here on listener-supported WBAI 99.5 FM.
And you're listening to radio station WBAI in New York. It's time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you. Back in the studio after...
Wait, God,
how long has it been?
Who are you?
People...
What are you doing here?
They didn't let me in the building at first. That was awfully embarrassing, wasn't it? They said they never saw me before, and they didn't because it's a totally different staff of people down there.
I want my chair back.
Yeah, now, Red Hack, you're sitting over in the regular second-class seats again.
And I'm not nearly as comfortable.
Over here at the
padding.
At the helm, and I got to tell you, it feels good. But, boy, you know, things sure have changed a lot around here. I mean, different people leaning against the wall, and you all seem to have grown a little bit. Physically.
Spiritually,
yeah,
maybe.
Not that way.
Oh, no, not at all?
Bernie, even on the phone, you seem a little different.
I sound different?
Well, it's your demeanor, I think.
Well, you heard me in person here in Philadelphia this past weekend, but it's good to see you.
That's true. I have dim recollections of seeing you over the weekend because it was the weekend of PumpCon. And the PumpCon, by the way, is one of the older conventions in the hacker world and one of the most traditional, I think, because it's tiny. You know, the tiny conventions are the best ones, and this one takes place in Philadelphia once a year at an undisclosed location, and we basically just sort of wander around town, meet people, talk to various other people, try to avoid other ones, you know, things like that. It's the usual.
And people come from far and wide.
They do, especially wide. And we drove the smart car down there, and I got to tell you, you know, every time I drive that thing, it's you know, a whole other group of people you meet. We had something like a 20-minute discussion with a bunch of cops on South Street. I think I said at the time, that's the longest peaceful conversation I've had with a policeman ever in my life. And that record holds to this day.
They were posing for pictures with each other and taking camera phone pictures of each other standing in front of it.
And then they launched into a tirade about why the American government is never going to allow these cars in and how corrupt they are. It doesn't take much, you know. It doesn't take much to get people to really unleash all the things that are hidden underneath and talk about what's really on their minds. And seeing a little tiny car like the smart car apparently is enough for some policemen.
It's good to see that the police in Philadelphia have no more of a job than the police in New York.
Okay, you're going to interpret that? All right. Arseny's going to interpret that statement. By the end of the show, you're going to understand it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good. So, you know, driving the smart car was a great experience, as always. In fact, I think this time I hit the boundary as far as the most crazy reaction I've gotten so far. I passed by an accident scene. Right, I passed by these people who had crashed their cars together, and the cops were there, and everybody was sort of leaning against the guardrails, filling out the forms and things like that. You know the expression people have when they're doing that. It's not a very good thing. One of them looks up, sees the car, jumps up and down, cheering and yelling and with a big smile on his face. This is the guy who just got into an accident. Now, this car is like a drug. It really cheers people up like no end. So maybe I should start charging to drive down your street. I don't know. That's part of what we did this weekend. But I haven't been here since July, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've been all around the world since then. In fact, I'm out of phase by one revolution because I went around and I need to go back the other way in order to wind up in the same place that I started. You understand that, right?
It's true.
All right.
This is why you showed up yesterday thinking it was today.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Or would it be tomorrow?
Well, the thing is...
Well, it was tomorrow yesterday, but...
We went through the international dateline. I did on a boat, and it was kind of disconcerting because I had two Sundays in a row. And I don't like Sundays to start with, but two of them in a row is a bit much. But then we were preempted all these last few weeks. I think, what?
2 weeks.
Last 2 weeks in a row, and then we had a 75% preemption rate in October.
It's true.
That's a record for us. That's a record for, I think, any month since before we started doing radio here.
Is it really? It might be.
So it's quite possible that all the listeners are elsewhere tonight, and they're going to need to come out and prove that they're there. In fact, I wouldn't mind seeing a show of support already. We're not going to take calls, but if you dial the number, 212-209-2900, and we see the lines fill up, at least we know there's people out there, you know, and that you haven't all run away, because we were preempted so many times.
Actually, we don't have any listeners anymore. We just have podcast devotees.
That's what I'm worried about. All right, yeah, I see one phone ringing, but it's way in the wrong area. Why are they starting down there? Look, it's starting by... They're filling in all over the place in weird areas.
Yeah, just ring a few times and then hang up and let other people
ring. Look
at that. That way we'll know that there are lots of people.
Okay, now I think we only need about three more to fill up all the lines.
We've got about 8 people, 10 people listening.
Looks like one more, only one more.
There are at least 10 people out there listening to this show.
One more is all it's going to take. And don't hang up.
Okay.
What's that, Bernie?
I think that hackers and blinking lights just go together.
They sure do. I think maybe line 6 is broken. That's why it's not lighting up.
Mike,
all the other ones.
Calling from the studio does not count.
Aww. Are you calling?
Why would I do that?
Well, you are calling, aren't you? All right. Well, all those people calling in, want to thank you because you actually connected to our 900 number, and that'll be $25 per ring. Thank you very much. Now, we'll take your phone calls later. It's good to know you're out there. I don't know if you intended to listen to this program. This is Off the Hook, the program about technology and advances in phones and computers and sometimes, regressions as well.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
I just wanted to express my thanks for Red Hack running the board in your absence.
Yes, I want to thank him too.
All these weeks, I think he did a pretty good job, and I'm ready for us to pick up some more momentum because we were out of commission for preemptives for so many weeks, and I think we can get back the energy and the momentum we had not too long ago.
Let's get this bus back on the highway and cruise up to highway speed, to coin a phrase.
Something like that.
All right. Good, good. And then I've got to explain what happened to me 3 weeks ago, was it? Because,
Yeah. Okay,
what happened? It was a fundraiser. The last time we were on the air was a fundraiser. It was sometime in October. I had every intention of being here. In fact, it was going to be my homecoming show because that was the first time I was back in the States and going all the way around the world, and I wasn't here.
We had to throw all those posters out that we made. And
yeah, there was a whole
Jake
big party and everything.
Canceled the parade.
Yeah,
zoo went back.
I'm sorry about that. And for those of you who listened to Off the Wall, you might have heard the story already. But basically what happened was I was sitting at home just minding my own business, or actually preparing a radio program. And all of a sudden I just had this really weird sensation where I was looking at words and they weren't making sense. And I started calling people on the phone intentionally and talking to them and realizing that I wasn't quite phrasing things properly. I was using the wrong potatoes. That's an example. You see, I would use the wrong word in a sentence, and it was just kind of disconcerting. So, you know, I started looking it up on the Internet, you know, having this condition happening to me, and, of course, I'm going on to Google right away. Other friends are also doing the same thing, and basically the conclusion is, Emmanuel, you should probably just go into the hospital, see what's going on. And I went over there, had a friend drive me, and the doctors there were very concerned at what I described. They thought I might be having a stroke, and that meant they were going to admit me, and, of course, being admitted meant I couldn't do the radio show. I did send an SMS message from my hospital bed, though, saying that I would explain what was going on to encourage people to pledge and things like that. So just to let you know, I'll be on my deathbed. I'm still going to have a cell phone. I'll be able to SMS and get some sort of words out. Yes, Bernie?
Two questions. One, did you get a CAT scan?
Mm-hmm.
And two, did they find any cats?
Very funny, Bernie, very funny. And humor is something that we do need in situations like that, and I kept my sense of humor throughout, and so did the medical staff over there. CAT scans, MRIs, they did all kinds of x-rays of my head. They didn't find anything.
You still haven't answered the question.
Don't even say that. What?
You still haven't answered the question.
Well, no cats, nothing. There's nothing. Nothing at all. Now the basic idea is that maybe it was just some kind of migraine or something like that. But it pays to be safe. It was kind of scary for a little while there.
And Google came into play here as well.
Google, they brought up the whole TIA thing, which is like sort of a mini stroke, which is it's possible it could have been that. That happens all the time. They suggested I take aspirin, little children's aspirin, every day for the rest of my life, and now somebody else is telling me that that's bad for you and it can do all kinds of other things.
Well, aspirin's a blood
thing. Children's aspirin's not that much.
It's not terrible. That's what we give aspirin for.
I heard it can upset your stomach.
And you need massive doses, much larger than that.
It does taste good, though, I say that. All right, so that's what happened to me. Nothing to really be concerned about. What, there's rumors outside that... I didn't make it or something.
I was worried when you came in saying brains, more brains.
Yeah, well, that's normal for me. Okay, so we have listeners. We have people here. We all seem to have survived this period of time, this strange period of time. Anybody have any stories they'd like to share over the last few months? Arseny?
Well, this is kind of an ongoing story with me, and Red Hat is kind of involved. We are now victims of Hurricane Wilma.
Oh, no.
Hurricane
what?
Wilma.
Yes.
All right, let's hear this one.
You've got to be kidding me.
I mentioned on the other radio show I want to be a victim of Hurricane Gamma. All right, I want to be hit hard by Gamma. I think that'd be so cool.
Well,
Gamma
we're back to Wilma. Now, Red Hack.
Did anybody do the Fred Flintstone yelling Wilma thing with Hurricane Wilma?
I've heard it somewhere.
Wait. All right. If Gamma becomes a big hurricane that causes damage, then my headline for the Daily News to steal is Gamma Rays, RAZE.
I don't think most people will get that.
Gamma Rays,
their problem.
Problem.
All right. We'll talk to them later.
So why are you guys victims?
Yes. We're not refugees, per se, but
let's
are
victims. Not start that again.
Where
was I? I was on a boat somewhere arguing with people over the word to call people. Oh, boy, I'll never forget that. But go ahead.
Red Hack's tent, which Air France never delivered.
Hold on. What are we talking about tents for? This is from What the Hack?
This is from What the Hack.
All right, left over from the Hacker Conference that took place in the camp field in Holland, and this was in July.
Yeah.
All right, you guys stayed in the same tent.
Yeah.
All right.
So I decided to take it back. Because he had more stuff, and I just figured I'd give it to him when I got back to New York. So that tent vanished. And
vanished where?
Well, we're not exactly sure.
But it vanished somewhere in the airplane? Or?
Well, it vanished somewhere when I was stopping over in Paris, I guess. After that, I never saw it.
I know
again.
Everyone's luggage got lost in Heathrow somehow.
Well, that luggage came back to everyone, though.
Okay, but this is different luggage.
What
I got
happened
lost.
Was they did send me a bag, and it wasn't a tent, and it wasn't my bag. And some poor man lost his bag.
Wait, what was in that bag?
Well, I don't know. I didn't want to open it. It wasn't mine.
Well, that could have been
yours now.
Maybe they just put his bag around your bag. Did you ever think of that?
Probably not.
Maybe he liked your tent and bag better than his.
Exactly.
Or maybe he's actually you, and you just don't know that yet.
Maybe this is God's way of paying you back for that tent. There's $150 in cash.
I should have checked. But anyway, the airport took that back, or I told them to take it back, because I wanted a tent. Not some poor man's bag, or woman's. And so essentially I've been calling Air France every week or so asking where my tent is. And now they said that after the strike in Paris, which apparently happens every month, there's a strike.
And the riots. Don't forget, there's riots going on in Paris, too.
Well, there's strikes, too.
Okay.
Strikes lead into the riots.
Yeah. Well, so now the Air France offices got wrecked by Hurricane Wilma.
Wait a minute, how did the Air France offices in Paris get wrecked by a hurricane?
Well, apparently they're not in Paris. They must be in some place where Hurricane Wilma attacked. So now they got moved to New York temporarily, and they don't have access to any of the things that were sent to their offices wherever they're off.
You know, Arson, I can't be the first person to bring this up, but maybe they're just hosing you. You know, maybe they're just all laughing. They're on their asses right now, saying this American geek here just keeps calling us, and we just keep telling those bizarre stories. I mean, they do get more bizarre every time you call them, right? That's a sure sign.
I guess. I thought at first that I was speaking to someone in India, because that's a trend nowadays. You would be calling Air France, thinking you're speaking to someone either in Paris or someone else, but they're actually in India. But no, these people were really, and they say bonjour every time.
They might as well be in India, though. That's probably where your bag is.
Well, actually, yeah. So that's my update, and I am also a victim now.
Well, you think you have it hard? Try getting a DSL line in this city that doesn't have Verizon as the provider. You have to use Verizon to install the actual wire. We've been trying to do this since July. Since July, and they just will not show up. We have people waiting for them. They just don't come. And I talked to the Public Service Commission. You know, they don't even regulate DSL. They don't regulate. They don't know who you can complain to. They suggested the Attorney General. We're going to try that, see what Elliot Spitzer is good for.
You can try all you want, but it is not actually possible to get a non-Verizon DSL line, so you might as well just get cable.
Well, you've been trying this, too.
I tried. I gave up. They won.
Uh-huh.
But I don't understand how they win, because now I have no – Verizon is not getting any of my money at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think they want that little – because you were going to use a different provider, right?
I was trying to use a non-Verizon provider to get DSL, and I failed at that, so I got cable.
But did you already have a DSL line?
I did. I had one of these ones where Verizon sort of has it, but
uh-huh.
not really.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't want that because I didn't want a phone line.
But you actually had the line going into your apartment. What did they need to come to your place for?
Apparently it's very complicated.
Uh-huh, but they just never showed up.
Well, they showed up and then they said, oh, we can't find your telephone box. And then they didn't reappear to tell me they couldn't find it.
See, I haven't even gotten them to the point where they show up. You know, well, they lie. They say they were there and they weren't. You know, I have people waiting and, they just don't show up.
You're ordering a more expensive service than I was trying to order. They probably, give you that much more incompetence.
Well, you know what? Pick it outside their offices or something. I think, something like that is required for us to actually get any satisfaction. You got to be vocal about it.
I don't think it'll work.
Just talking on the FM airwaves is not enough.
The problem is you probably can't deal directly with Verizon if you're actually enlisting another company to buy the service from. In other words, if you deal with the XYZ company to get your third-party DSL from, they are Verizon's customer, and you are not.
Actually,
you have to go through XYZ. Isn't that how it works?
Well, yes, you're off by one, because the provider goes through something called DSLNet, and they're the ones that deal with Verizon. So you're two removed.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. I don't know. I think you have to take hostages to get this service.
You know, I had a conference call with the ISP I was trying to get, the middleman, and this was on the cell phone.
Sorry about that. I don't know why that happened.
I was on the cell phone of the Verizon employee who was standing there, and even that was no help.
Yes.
And this is all because DSL is classified as an information service, right?
Yes, it is.
As opposed to a telecommunications
service.
There was a lengthy article on the topic in Salon.com on October 18th, which I think is after the last time we were on the air, about how DSL and other broadband services are a lot less expensive and a lot faster in countries where there's actually competition. So it's an interesting article if people want to take a look at it.
All right.
And
well,
one of the ironies in all this is that the FBI now is trying to say that DSL and cable modem service and any other broadband service, which under this, under the Public Utilities Commission authority and FCC's authority, is considered a information service and not a telecommunications service, the FBI is saying, well, we say that it falls under the definition of telecommunications service so that we can wiretap everything under the CALEA law, Communications Act for Law Enforcement Assistance, they pushed through in 1994. So it looks like everybody in the government, except for the aspects that could help the customer, are saying this is a telecommunications service. But when it comes to some accountability for the customer to have to be able to turn to, it's not a telecommunications service. Go figure.
Okay, well, we're going to have to go figure a lot of things and try to get satisfaction out of these guys. Incidentally, I figured out why it made that horrible noise. I don't know if anybody cares, but we were feeding the input to the CD burner into itself. And that's the kind of noise you get when you do that.
Don't do that then.
I'm not going to do that again, but what I will do is play something from a friend of ours that we've already played once. But I just thought it was so apropos in light of the events of the past week. I'm referring, of course, to our beloved Robert Steele, who gives addresses at our Hope conferences every time we have a Hope conference. And Bernie, I believe you're the one who asked him the question about the whole Valerie Plame incident. This was last year. This was over a year ago, about a year and a half ago, actually.
A year and a half ago.
And
this,
man,
was sort of not a very well-known story back then.
No, it wasn't that well-known, and this guy nailed it. It's unbelievable. How many of you even heard about this? What is it, Skip, Butch, what's the guy's name?
Scooter,
that's it, yeah. Real nice image to convey to the rest of the world, having advisors called Scooter.
Maybe Robert Steele is Agent A.
Well, you know, he knows something. Take a listen to this.
All right, sir, your question.
You'd mentioned a short while ago a need for a national traitor intelligence system. On that subject, what's your take on the whole Valerie Plame outing, and who do you think did it?
I think Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney's office did it with Karl Rove's explicit approval and Dick Cheney's explicit concealment after the fact.
What are your feelings on it?
It has the potential to be Al Capone's tax return.
Do you think this will ever be? Where do you think the investigation will lead? Well, regardless of who's found to have done it.
Part of our problem is that the Republicans control both houses of Congress, and the moderate Republicans are being intimidated by the extremist Republicans. And the people haven't spoken. Right now, the people don't care about Valerie Plume's outing. Inasmuch as the vice president's office, in my humble opinion, very flagrantly and deliberately violated a national law, I'd like to see them brought to justice. I would like to see Dick Cheney brought to justice for sole sourcing billions of dollars to Halliburton. You know, these guys are bending or breaking every rule they can find. The outing of Valerie Plume, I think, is one of the things that George Tenet simply had to be honest about. And it led to his eventual resignation.
Okay, there you have it. And, you didn't get the name right. Valerie Plame, not Valerie Plume. But that doesn't matter. I guess that sort of proves that he wasn't involved.
But he nailed every name that came out of these indictments.
He got Scooter Libby. I mean, how many people even knew Scooter Libby's name a year and a half ago?
Why haven't we emailed that clip to Nightline and all the news services? That's astonishing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And listeners should know, this wasn't just some guy with an opinion. This guy, Robert Steele, is a career CIA analyst, and he did some covert operative work, too. So he would have fallen under the same protection law that Valerie Plame was under, and her cover was blown. And in those cases, the agents' lives are really at stake, because if that gets out, they can be killed, basically.
Or certainly the people that talk to that agent can be killed, and there's speculation that that's indeed what happened. It just goes to show you the depths that some people will sink to. Hopefully, they'll actually do something about it. But right now they're just prosecuting somebody for lying to the grand jury. How about, prosecuting somebody for, the lies in the first place that led to all this? That's indication of the kinds of things you'll hear at our conferences. We have another one coming up. Next July, the second to last weekend of July. I don't have the exact date in front of me, but it's called Hope Number 6. And that's one of the things that's been announced. When was it announced? Was it announced before our long sojourn?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Okay, it was. All right. So that'll be coming your way next July, and we'll have all kinds of interesting speakers. If you're interested, keep listening, and we'll give you more information. Okay, now what's the story I've been getting over the past day about some kind of smell in New York? You guys know anything about this? I wasn't in New York last Thursday, but supposedly in the night air all throughout Manhattan, there was the smell of something like maple syrup or caramel or freshly baked pie or a bit of honey candy bars. That's according to the New York Times.
It's a pretty good smell.
You smelled it?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
What's going
Everybody
on?
Everybody I know smelled it.
Really?
I don't know. It was just, it was there. No one
it was a giant waft of odor from
I think it probably came
source.
From somewhere in the ocean.
You mean, think it came from the, you well, think chocolate bars came from the ocean?
No, I'm just, it's just, since they haven't, they haven't found any source of it. You know, people thought maybe it was a candy factory caught fire or something. But since on the mainland, nobody's been able to determine where it came from.
Well, did anybody broach the subject that maybe it's the government experimenting to see how
mind
certain things... Yeah. No, not mind control. How certain things can be transmitted through the air, you know, like poisonous gas, for instance.
They're actually... done these experiments. A relative of mine was in town a few months ago doing these kinds of experiments for the APA, but I don't.
Wait, your relative came into town to do experiments?
Yeah, they were like,
on us.
On air, mostly on airflow.
Well, we breathe that air. That's our air.
But I don't think there was any bit of honey involved. So
they also did that in the subway system, I believe, a couple of years ago to see how quickly something would travel throughout the whole system.
In the subways, they did it in the late '60s.
I'm sorry, Bernie. Go ahead.
There's actually a network of air sampling stations around the country. They're part of the Department of Homeland Security. Hundreds of these stations are around the country in various different places. There's several in each city in order to study the patterns of any type of airborne pathogen or chemical that could spread as a result of a terrorist attack. And I would hazard to guess the Department of Homeland Security knows exactly what this smell is, because they have access to the data that these sniffers pick up around the city. So by now, I'm sure they have analyzed this data and have an answer, but they're not telling us.
Well, this certainly resulted in a very silly story in the New York Times. Listen to some of these sentences here. The aroma not only revived memories of childhood, but in a city scared by terrorism, it raised vague worries about an attack deviously cloaked in the smell of grandma's kitchen. It was so seductive that many New Yorkers found themselves behaving strangely, succumbing to urges usually kept under wraps. One woman, who never touches the stuff, said she was inspired to eat ice cream. Now, first of all, how in the world did the New York Times track her down? You know, it sounds like just an anecdotal thing that was said over the telephone when somebody was talking.
And why there's been this whole hoopla around the use of named and anonymous sources at the New York Times. Why does this woman who said she bought ice cream have to not have her name in the paper?
Yeah, it's, maybe it's the reporter that went to prison. You know,
you think?
Yeah, well, they can't mention her name, and I'm not going to mention her name.
No.
Is that the goal of, like, this new wave of terrorists, trying to get Americans to eat more ice cream?
Well, I don't know, but it definitely, you know, marketing-wise, it certainly does show something, doesn't it? You know, that this smell will get people to do things like that?
Maybe it was a research experiment by McDonald's.
And is that illegal to do that, to make the air smell pleasant? I know a few years ago, and I'd like to know if anybody else remembers this, maybe 10, 15 years ago, there was a bad smell that drifted all throughout Long Island. It started somewhere in New York, and it just... The air smelled like sewer for an entire evening. Do you remember that?
It started in Staten Island. I live in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn.
That's not very nice, although it is probably true.
I remember it started either in Staten Island or just across Staten Island in Jersey, where the Exxon has a refinery.
But you're making that assumption, obviously.
They never nailed it either. But, but they know it wafted. People smelled it from Staten Island out east and went a good 20, 30 miles at least past the city border.
And there was also the smell of the World Trade Center when that came down, and we smelled that out on the island a couple of days later as well. So, yeah, these things do travel. So the question is, who was making the cookies and why?
And what was in them?
I guess we'll find out. Okay, now there's... The subway searches, of course, are continuing. Jim, I believe you said in shock that you were searched. What's going on?
Well, I wasn't in shock when I said it.
That's your normal expression. All right, fine.
You were shocked when I said it. I got searched, what was this, about a week and a half ago. I had stumbled by BAI at some ungodly hour for purposes nefarious or personal, and was going home at about 6 in the morning, went to the Whitehall Street station of the R train, the R, the N, the W, the main entrance, and went downstairs, and there were about six police officers. And there were...
At what time?
About 6:30 in the morning.
Okay.
About six police officers, a little folding table, and this sign, which I don't remember what it says, but you see it always when you see film of the searches.
It's I saw it tonight.
What does it say?
All, I think, backpacks and bags subject to search by the police.
Yeah, something along that. It runs about one line, maybe 15 words at the most, probably less.
Was this before or after the turnstile?
This was before one entered the turnstile. And I was thinking of turning around and leaving this, but I was tired and it was an ungodly hour in the morning. I wanted to get home. If I had been less tired, I probably would have turned around saying, "You cannot stop jihad." See what happens.
Oh, I don't think you should say that.
I don't think I should either, but you know me. I'm an idiot. So I decided, well, what the heck. I walked over, plunked my bag on the table.
Wait, you voluntarily plunked your bag down without even being asked?
Yeah, I didn't.
You mean they didn't come up to you and say they wanted to search you? You went to them?
I was the only person there. I figured the odds of my slipping into the crowd was next to
no. No, but it's not about slipping into the crowd. They only search one out of every N people. You could have easily not been the one, but you voluntarily had yourself searched. You get no sympathy.
Yeah, you know what? They even verified this. There's a testimony going on. I think it just ended yesterday. The NYCLU brought a case, a legal challenge against the police inspection of bags on the entrances to the subway system. And one of the things that came out was that, in fact, yes, they only take every 10 or 20 people or something, some kind of numerical value. Of course, that's assuming that they're telling the truth, which I don't really know if they are. So, yeah, they don't ask everybody to be searched. Right. They ask a random number.
Yeah, I just walked past them.
So. See, now you're
done that, but I was the only person there.
Well, were they looking straight at you as you walked
yes,
in?
Yes, they were looking straight at me. I was the only person there. What else were they looking at?
Uh-huh.
Well, you're making us look...
You have a guilty conscience.
Yeah, you know, only a person with a guilty conscience would walk up.
I had nothing on me, so I had no guilty conscience. But anyway, let me please continue.
Yes.
Because there is a point that I would like to make. So I walked up, and they proceeded to look at the bag, and I said, you know, this is not only unconstitutional, but it violates your oath of office as a police officer, in which you swear to uphold the Constitution. That took them all aback. It was... kind of surprising for them to find anyone so erudite who had a detailed opinion.
But you were wrong.
Why was I wrong?
Because you volunteered to give them
the bag. Because you walked over and handed it to them. They didn't even ask you for it.
Well, okay, yes. If I sue them, I don't have a leg to stand on. But on the other hand, I think I made them think. Perhaps I'm wrong. Perhaps that's too much of a supposition on my part.
Maybe it's instructive that only by being wrong can you make the police officers think.
Hmm.
Oh, that's good, too. Yeah, I like that. But anyway, let me get to the point. After this proceeded, and the police remarked that I was the first person to actually protest in a polite manner. But the point I want to make, we're finally
protest
getting to it.
Protest your own volunteerism.
All right, let him make his point.
The point I'd like to make is, if I had had anything explosive at that point, I would have detonated it. I was just...
But that's you. You know, I would have waited. I would have waited until maybe I was going up the steps.
No.
Because then you blocked the entrance.
Well, no. I didn't want to
do
that.
Everyone's different.
I felt...
Everyone detonates at a different time.
Whether or not I brought it on myself is irrelevant to this. And what it's irrelevant to is the fact that I felt violated in a constitutional way.
But you're supposed to feel violated. That's the point of oppression.
Jim, I'm going to go downstairs, find a cop, hand him or her my bag and say, search it, and then complain about it.
See, you're making us look very bad by not following the advice we're giving our listeners. If we can't do it, how is there any hope?
I got to step in here. You can't chastise somebody for the way they behave in a situation of stress like that. And that's something I've learned over the years, is that we can say, yeah, when it happens, when the cop says something to you, I'm going to challenge them. When it actually happens, though, who knows? I got searched in New Mexico while I was on a train. I probably could have argued against that. But you know what? It wasn't worth it. I would have been in New Mexico for several days. So I submitted. I don't feel good about it, but sometimes that's what happens.
But it's at least good for people to know that they can protest. Because I remember when I was back in high school, I was stopped by police and they searched me. And they had no reason to search me. But they did. And I didn't know any better. So when they said, we are going to search your car, I said, okay.
It's not my car anywhere. I just found it.
Yeah. But if it's and the body in the back, that was there.
If it's happening in your city and you know, you expect this to happen and you know that it's going to happen at some point, you're probably going to be subject to this, I think it's, you know, it's something that you really should do. It's, you know, your duty to protest this if you really don't believe in it.
I would also like to point out in my own defense, it was early morning. I'd been up for 20 hours. I was tired. I was going home. I didn't want the hassle of walking to another station, of having them to, of forcing them to call me over. I figured that my likelihood of being called over anyway was high. That's the only reason I went over voluntarily. Mm-hmm. There was no crowd to blend into.
Listen, I think it's completely understandable, and I'm glad you at least said that one thing to them. You know, everybody does it in their own way. So whether it's objecting by telling people or objecting to their faces, the important thing is that we continue to object. The NYCLU is continuing to object. They just had the hearing. The final arguments will be on December 2nd. And the verdict is going to be issued soon afterwards. So that'll decide whether or not this is constitutional, what's going on in the subways. I have yet to be approached, searched, or anything, though.
I did mention a couple of the further things that I said to the police officer, and he said back, was that he said, wouldn't you rather be searched than blow up? And I said, no, I'd rather blow up than be searched.
That wasn't the right answer.
Well, yeah, I think that's what they
wanted. Well, they didn't start drawing their guns at that point.
Uh-huh. Well, yeah, but I mean, you know.
The correct answer is that you're not preventing anything by doing this.
Well, yes, I know that, but I'm sure they know that, too. I felt that was a useless road to go down.
I would say, you mean being searched somehow gives me an extra life? You know, I have like this immortality because the person next to me blows up and I'm not affected? How does my being searched? They haven't found anything on anybody they've searched so far. And you really think somebody who's,
they found all kinds of things. They found police uniforms that actors were going
to
use.
According to the NYCLU testimony, nobody has been...
I have just had a brilliant idea.
What's that?
There are about 469 subway stations in the city. There are
468
at the time. Yeah, I read that, too.
Okay, whatever. I'm off by one. There are... How many entrances per subway station at the most? Five?
At the most?
Well, on average,
what's
five?
Times Square? It's like 50. I don't know.
But the point is, it's still a finite number.
Yeah.
2,000 people could be at every entrance simultaneously, could
mm-hmm.
they not?
Of course.
We get 2,000 people together at some given time. We go to every subway entrance at that time. We see how many... No, let me finish. We see how many get are manned by police searching people.
Mm-hmm.
The point is this. We then have a factual number to present to the police and the courts and everything that shows for darn sure that this search is absurd.
Well, I think the NYCLU has already done that. They've gotten all sorts of people to, to go into subway stations and they count the number of cops, number of people. I think it's obvious that it's a big waste of time. Hopefully, the court will conclude the same thing.
New York City, the residents of New York City have already concluded the same thing. According to this article, the Times did a survey in August, which found that only 32% of the people said the searches provided additional security, while 60% said the searches were simply intended to make riders feel safer.
Mm-hmm.
Which is it's good.
And a lot of people also approve of that, though. it's meaningless, but it makes me feel better, so I approve of it.
Well,
it's ridiculous logic like that.
We're getting there, is the thing.
Okay, let's move on to some other things. Do you see this story today out of the Washington Post? It doesn't really have anything to do with our subject matter per se, but the CIA has been hiding and interrogating some of its most important al-Qaeda captives at a Soviet-era compound in East Europe, and also places like Thailand, Afghanistan, and several democracies in Europe, and a small center, the Guantanamo Bay Prison in Cuba. If you have not seen the story, go to WashingtonPost.com. It's still on the front page. And you know what they've done there? They actually have printed the names of as many detainees as they could find in Guantanamo Bay, information that is not being released by the government. They were able to figure it out through various hearings and other documents and things like that. And I just think that's something that we really need to see. But, man, this is... This kind of a story, this is like revolution time. You read things like this. I mean, secret
Network
prisons.
Of secret prisons.
It's not, you know, there's being, there's torture going on in these things by CIA people and by foreign governments and by third country governments in these other countries.
I like
which
how
East,
they.
Which Eastern Europe country do you think it is?
They're not saying because they don't want to embarrass that country because it would be illegal there.
I kind of like Poland or the Ukraine as categories.
Thing is,
from what I heard at PumpCon this past weekend, it may well be Prague, or I'm sorry, the Czech Republic.
Well, I don't know about that. That seems kind of iffy. But it could be. It could be anywhere, I guess. The existence and locations of the facilities referred to as black sites in classified White House, CIA, Justice Department, and congressional documents are known to only a handful of officials in the United States, and usually only to the president and a few top intelligence officers in each host country. Up against the wall. Come on, it's time, people. What are we waiting for? Secret prisons, torture going on. Our own elected officials not knowing about it. Only the people at the very top knowing about it. Check it out, WashingtonPost.com. This had better be the story that makes the whole thing collapse. Or, there's nothing left. We need aliens from outer space to help us if this doesn't work. All right, here's a letter from one of our listeners. And you can write your own letter to OTH at 2600.com. You can also send us snail mail. That's mail that goes through this postal service that is still out there somewhere.
Do it soon, because in January the rates are increasing.
That's what I heard. I heard that too. You can send for cheaper if you send a postcard, as some people do. Our address is Off the Hook, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
Oh, wait a minute. You're not Walter. What's...
Oh.
You're Redbird. Where's Walter? Walter's not here. Oh, well.
It was up for grabs.
All right. 120 Wall Street, 10th floor. New York, New York.
10005.
Oh, you're here tonight, Jim.
Yeah.
Oh, good. Okay. Here's a letter that somebody sent us. I will try to be brief. That's what the person said. They started by saying that. I appreciate that. I bought some beer over the weekend at Western Michigan University at a store called Munchie Mart.
That's the name of the store.
On many radio stations, that's enough for a good letter right there, but we have even more. They asked to see some ID, and I showed them. After giving them my identification, they then swiped it through a magstrip reader that had a built-in printer and tape roll, looked like a printing calculator. I noticed it printed my name, age, and driver's license number. After noticing this, I asked the lady to hand me the copy of my personal information so I could discard it. She refused and told me she had to record it for the city police because in case they sell to minors, that is. I was outraged. I started to argue some more and then was told, if you have a problem, don't shop here. I told her I wouldn't, as I was only visiting a friend at the university anyway. I was wondering if anyone knows the legalities with this. I know it's only minimal information, but that's not the point at all. I'm also considering writing an email to the Kalamazoo police, inquiring if they enforce the unauthorized recording of personal information. I wonder how many identities they gather a day and how many actually know the store does this. Please help with some advice. Signed, Bug Dave. Now, Red Hack, you seem to have some information about this.
I don't have information about it. I have a similar story.
Okay.
From when I turned 18.
You told the story in the year before.
I have told the
story. Yeah, but tell it again quickly, and then I think Bernie has something to say about this.
I went to a 7-Eleven to get a cigar because I was legally entitled to do so. And they had a machine there to scan my ID, which would, I assume, read the barcode information to determine my age.
Mm-hmm.
And they did so, but because their clock was 7 hours behind, it still thought that I was 17, and so it printed something up. I didn't take a close look at what it was, or at least I don't remember anymore. It's been a while.
Printed up an arrest warrant or something?
But and so they said that they couldn't sell it to me and blah, blah, blah. And then I went to another gas station that didn't have this, you know, crazy
machine. Did you buy cigars at gas stations?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that.
And
well, don't light it up
there. That's, yeah, it's kind of ironic. But
Bernie,
what
do you have to say about this, Bernie?
I got to ask, why didn't you just point at the clock and say, look, see what time it is? It doesn't match your machine?
No, I had an argument. It didn't. They would have none of it. They said the machine was always right.
The state of Pennsylvania put something like this into effect about 3 years ago, and in PA, it's antiquated system where only the government is allowed to sell hard liquor. So all the liquor stores are owned and operated by the state of Pennsylvania within the state limits. So anyway, I went in to buy a bottle of wine, knowing this that you had to have a driver's license from some state, and I went in there without a driver's license. I went in with my passport, my U.S. passport, instead. And went to buy my bottle of wine, and the woman clerk at the checkout counter, she said, well, you need some kind of driver's license. This is not suitable. I'm like, this is a federal government ID.
Mm-hmm.
And I just so happened to have a printout of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board's regulation.
Why do I get the impression you went in there looking for a fight?
I wanted to see what would happen.
Uh-huh.
The regulation required what?
It required government-issued photo identification, which a U.S. passport is, in fact. And she wouldn't let me buy the bottle of wine. So then I talked to the store manager, and he started giving me a hard time, and I showed him the regulation, and I got his name and wrote it down, and I said, well, this is all going into a letter to Harrisburg, which is where their headquarters is for the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. And I said, this is going to a letter that will state that you are failing to comply with Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board regulations. And then he said, well, just buy your wine and don't come back here again. So I got my bottle of wine left.
Well, I don't know if I want to buy wine now. Maybe I feel I should get the wine for free.
Now, all of this was because the machine couldn't read the ID. Now,
that's right.
What about states where the driver's license does not have a magnetic stripe or a barcode?
I think every state except California complies to a certain California has its own weird sort of format, doesn't it, for their mag stripe?
Right, but I not all driver's licenses, especially in New Jersey, for example, the old ones do not have a barcode.
Which is why they have new ones.
Yeah, how many people still have the old ones?
There's a lot of people with old ones.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, apparently they write stuff down because the clerk did write down information from my passport, but she wasn't able to enter it into the database with the magstripe. It didn't file. She couldn't scan my passport like she is used to scanning all the driver's licenses. I learned a lesson here, or sort of reaffirmed a lesson that I've learned quite a while ago, that government bureaucrats, they usually feel like they have this shield they can hide behind, this big bureaucracy, but there's one thing they really fear, and that is that entire bureaucracy coming down on their own heads.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the judo I threw at this guy, just implying that the whole bureaucracy that he hides behind would come down on his head.
That's definitely that's a good way to get them to react. Now, my question here is, do they really store this information? I mean, first of all, okay, storing this information doesn't even make much sense to me. If it's to prove if they sold something to someone underage, wouldn't they not sell to somebody who had a license that didn't print out the right information?
Wouldn't that person have a false identification anyway, so that it wouldn't be tied to them? Unless,
yeah, I don't know.
The only way I could think is. With certain IDs, you know, you can change what the number is by using colored pencil or whatever. Mm-hmm. But then the barcode would still say that they were of age or underage, and so theoretically they wouldn't sell to them.
There's a lot of issues here. Let's not get lost. First of all, there's a question of this information. Is it retained statute? Is it there a statute that requires them to print it out? Is there a statute that requires them to retain it? Secondly, what information is being retained? And what is it being used for, and who is it being retained by? If this is a case of the law requiring it to be retained by the state, well, that's legal. It's not a good idea. I don't want the state knowing how much liquor I buy. I don't want the store knowing how much liquor I buy. If it's just a case of, well, you're of age and you bought this, and every transaction we have an ID, and the people are of age, that's fine. No, then that's okay. That's a different purpose.
Well, the claim is that the only reason is because they don't want to sell to minors. Now, the information they can obtain is exactly what's on your driver's license, and almost every barcode and magstripe driver's license that I've seen, it's pretty much a replicate of the data that's on the card already. And, you know, if they can't, I don't understand why they can't just read the card and see it.
Yeah, they're reading it. They see it in front of them.
Exactly. And those two things, the magstripes and the barcodes, are just as easily counterfeited as you know the card itself.
Not for a high school student though. A high school student's going to have much easier access to colored pencils and knives to change.
Start with the barcode.
But the barcode would be a lot harder.
But a lot of the new security features on the licenses anyway don't allow. You can't really do that.
Our correspondent should write to the police in a polite letter and ask them, why is this being retained? Is it just to prove that they're selling legally? Is this information going to be used for any other purpose? And tell them, I don't like people keeping track of how much I drink.
Well, and at least
I will
one,
tell you what they do with the data.
In at least one case.
Speaking for the state of Pennsylvania, where I happen to live, or the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, they archive this information. They store it in a database. This is the state. They do this. And they have used it for evidence in prosecuting criminal cases. One case I'm familiar with, someone of legal age purchased a large amount of alcohol at a state store, and they connected it with a criminal case where there was underage drinking at a party. And when the party was raided, they got the ID off of everybody that was at that party. One of the people in the party was of legal age, and they tracked their alcohol purchases through that database to that person, who they said then brought all this alcohol to the party, and they charged them criminally with supplying the alcohol to minors. So there's one example of where they store this information. It's not just for a printout to see that you're of legal age to buy it. They store it, and they've also used it in cases where someone was charged with DUI to see how much alcohol this defendant had purchased over X period of weeks or months. So they store it, and who knows how long they keep it, but they do keep it for a while.
Yeah, I was just about to mention about how in New York, I don't know if it's happened yet or if it's going to happen, but you have to register when you purchase a keg of beer. They're gonna take information down on who purchased it, and of course each keg is a number.
Mm-hmm.
And so then if someone raids a party and there's a keg there, they know who bought it, and so then they can connect.
Big Brother works in such weird ways.
Little Brother works too. My cousin some time ago went to a club and they scanned her ID.
Mm-hmm.
and she later received at her parents' address, which was the address on the ID, which she doesn't otherwise use much, some junk mail from that club.
Thank you for attending our club without the knowledge of your parents.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that's brilliant. 212-209-2900 is our phone number. We only have a few minutes left, so if you have something to say to us, this is one of the times when we're on the air, and I think we're going to be on the air next week, too.
That's
Joy.
The rumor.
How exciting.
So this is your chance to call in and feedback.
I also have some related news from Germany. Germany is now introducing the biometric passports. This is according to Deutsche Welle. The passports in Germany, now if you get a new passport, will have information about you. Encoded in an electronic chip inside them. There's a facial recognition system which measures and records the distance between the features, mouth, eyes, nose, forehead, and chin. These features are allegedly unique for each person, but then it goes on, and in the second-to-last paragraph in the article, they point out that these biometric scanners have an error rate of 15 to 25%,
good
making
Lord.
Them all but useless.
Okay. That's interesting. And I guess it's starting up already, and soon we'll have that here
as
well.
This is, of course, due at least in part to the request of the U.S. government, where if you want to come here without getting a visa, your country has to have these things.
All right. Let's in the few minutes that we have, let's take some phone calls, 212-209-2900. Let's see who's out there. And good evening. You're on the air. Please turn down your radio as we are on delay.
Hey, can you hear me?
Yes, I hear you fine.
I like to speak about the caramel honey smell that took place last Thursday.
Please do.
I have a friend who works for the EPA, and she's like low management. But you know, after talking with her after a couple of shots, she said there was perfect climate temperatures to do such a test, and they're investigating it as of now. But it seemed to be like there's a cold front in the lower stratosphere of New York City that allowed for such a exercise to be done, and she doesn't know, but she speculates it could be something to the effect of what you were saying about how fast can a gas or a controlled substance spread throughout the city at a period of time during controlled conditions, meaning that there was a warm climate above the stratosphere, which allowed for this type of spreading of gas to come in a lower atmosphere to actually spread fast and quickly throughout New York City. And it affected all five boroughs and even New Jersey.
Well, it's definitely gives you something to think about. Next time you smell something nice, it might not be so innocent. But thanks for that information. Boy, I wish I had smelled it. I was out on the island that night. Didn't reach there. Nothing smelled good there. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hey, I was wondering if either one of you guys, if any of you guys had given to giveathowl.com.
To what? Did that make any sense?
No.
Okay, I didn't understand what he said. Now, if you want to say something like that, make sure that you're understood. Okay, that person's gone. Let's try over here. Good evening. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
Good. My name is Brian, and I recently went to the country of Antigua. Are you familiar with that country?
Yes, yes. So it's actually an island.
All right. Well, it turns out I lost my wallet on the trip, and I ended up not having that great of a time. And unfortunately, in Antigua, there's a $20 leaving fee up the country.
There's a $20 leaving fee. Are you moving at the moment?
Am I moving?
Yeah, because you're kind of breaking up a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I'm in a car.
Okay. Try not to drive under a tunnel or something. Okay. So there's a $20 leaving fee for Antigua.
Yeah, and I didn't have it.
So you couldn't leave.
I couldn't leave. I had to wait there for 12 hours in the airport waiting for this money order to come through.
Wow.
For $20. And, yeah, that's pretty unfortunate.
Can you imagine having to pay to leave a country?
Imagine, right?
Wow.
Wasn't even that great.
What if you refuse to pay? Do they...
Then you can't leave.
Yeah, you know, that's...
But at some point you're overstaying your visa and you have to be deported.
Maybe they just put you in one of the secret prisons that the United States has set up there.
Well, I think all the listeners of this show now will never have to worry about that. Don't go to Antigua, folks. Let's boycott them.
Well, you know, some countries you have to pay to get into. I think the United States, one of the bridges up in Canada, you have to pay to get in. And, in fact, Mexico, too, you have to pay down by El Paso, I believe.
You're paying for the bridge. You can always go 20, 30,
100
miles.
How do you get into the country without using the bridge?
The river doesn't go everywhere, like Montana.
Oh, okay. Let's take one more phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, how you doing?
All right.
What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi, you're on the air. What's
oh,
on
I
your
am?
Mind? Yes.
Wow, I've been trying to get through.
Well, you succeeded, so make the most of it.
Thanks so much. I'm sorry. The day after Katrina hit, they had an interesting segment on WGN News out of Chicago about a woman who had a heart condition and had a defibrillator put into her.
Uh-huh.
And they had put a special, it was called a Lumos defibrillator, and they put on a thing on it that uh-huh. would, if there was a problem with her heart, it would call her physician.
Oh, wow.
His cell phone.
Like a little modem attached to her.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I was like, wow, this is such an off-the-hook thing because it's got Big Brother, it's got cell phones.
And it's implanted onto you. That's...
Yes, inside of her.
Well, what happened when the phone lines go down or the cellular systems don't work anymore like Katrina?
Yeah, that could be a real problem.
I don't know. I mean, it was the day after Katrina now that you mention it.
Yeah.
Wow. So
that would be a life-threatening situation in a double kind of way if your physician couldn't get access to this data because the cellular system was unreliable and the phone lines were unreliable.
Right, but but you wouldn't get the data at all if you didn't have the system, so it's at least good to have it, even if maybe the phone system might go down.
Well, let's think of some of the other applications of this. If somebody, for instance, is on probation, you don't want them taking any alcohol because that leads to bad things. So you have something set up to monitor your blood alcohol level, and it calls your probation officer if it goes over. This is amazing.
Exactly what I was thinking. Exactly.
Uh-huh.
But it's called Lumos. I wrote it down.
L-U-M-O-S?
I think it's L-U-M-O-S.
But
it's on WGN News the day after the hurricane.
Okay, well, thanks for alerting us. We're going to look into that a little bit more.
Thank you, guys.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Our time is just about up, but any other reminders? I guess we have, the 2600 meetings coming up this Friday?
Yes, hopefully.
Right. Here in New York City and throughout the world. Oh, come on, there's always announcements. Bernie, you have anything coming up?
I'll be going to trial next Wednesday.
That's right, your trial. People don't know about this, but you got into trouble on, was it New Jersey Transit?
I bought my ticket and got on the train and then was charged with failing to validate my ticket on the New Jersey Transit River Line, which apparently lots of other people don't know to do either because there's a whole bunch of people in court with me. So I have my trials next Wednesday, and we'll talk about it on Off the Hook. I have a good strategy.
Yeah, I can hardly wait to hear about this. This sounds like another one of these interesting legal shenanigans. Well, I want to thank everybody for calling in, for listening. OTH@2600.com is our email address. Please feel free to write to us. And from what I've heard, from the rumors that are circulating in the hallways of this radio station here, next week at this time, you will once again hear us saying goodnight and saying to stay tuned for the Personal Computer Show coming up next. Have a good night.